What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, finance, business, and of course, mental health.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate.
This is part two. We have my financial advisor coming out of Nashville, Tennessee, my brother Nelson Simmons III, NS3. We're going to finish that conversation. We were already talking about in part one. We were already talking about the Mag 7 Plus 1. For you folks that hadn't listened, Mag 7 Plus 1 is Apple, it's Microsoft, it's Amazon, it's Google, it's Meta, which is used to be called Facebook, part of the Fang family, Nvidia and Tesla, and they added Broadcom, calling it Mag 7 Plus 1. So my question for you, Nelson, we already know what the Mag 7 Plus 1 is. I just stated that. My question for you going into this conversation, because we're in part two now, it's February 1st.
Yes.
Is there a specific order to purchase the Mag 7 Plus 1, or it doesn't matter, just get them in your portfolio?
You just need to have those 7 Plus 1 in your overall portfolio, whether you're holding them in single form, or like I stated in part one, in a managed fund for you. Now, you know how I always believe, I believe a portfolio should be as diversified as it can be, but you definitely got to have those. That's a must.
I got you, but I think my question for you is, like, if I have 10 grand cash, how should I organize the portfolio of purchasing the Mag 7? Like, if I have 10 grand cash right now, what order should I purchase them in? Because I would think I'm just get the cheapest ones first, and then I don't know, but that's why I have you. Let's talk.
Like, I believe in dispersing funds evenly. So disperse them out as even as possible. I wouldn't worry about the price necessarily. And that's how I would go with that.
Okay, great. And let's talk about, because a lot of brothers I talk to a lot of times say, man, you still paying your financial advisor, bro. You wasting money. You don't need to pay no advisor, bro. Just get you Robinhood. You know, you can get a Coinbase. You can get the stocks yourself. You can get your own individual stocks. Yeah, you're going to pay a little bit more. But a lot of people that I speak to, especially brothers these days, this is Black Men Sundays, they say, man, I'd rather get individual stocks. Do it myself than to have an advisor giving me group stocks. What's your opinion on that? And let's have that conversation, because that was a two-part question where a lot of brothers are saying nowadays they don't feel a need to have a financial advisor when they could do it themselves. So let's have that conversation.
Well, I mean, I believe that one should consider a financial advisor. A financial advisor keeps you from doing, you know, the wrong things at the wrong time, just doing dumb stuff, right? It's the psychology behind it. And they're there to hold your hands during hard economic times, right? Usually what you see people doing is, you know, they'll sell high. I mean, it's opposite. You need to be buying when things are low. That's when most of the money is made. So that's first and foremost. You know, it keeps individuals from, you know, just going off the deep end and following the latest investment trends. There's a science behind all this, and you need someone to kind of guide you through the financial landscape. So that's one of the reasons. And also, you can't be an expert on everything. And we must start looking at ourselves, especially when you start making a lot of money and you need to put strategies together to, you know, maybe avoid taxes, because taxation at the ordinary income level is, you see what I'm saying, it's just bad, right? So ways to circumvent various things. So I guess what I'm trying to say and what I'm babbling on is, as you progress, you need a team that can lead you, a team of professionals, because you don't have to be an expert on everything, right? So for me, I am trained, I have my background in accounting, but I still have a CPA because I have multiple properties at one time and did not want to contend with all the laws and regulations and tax breaks that come about that you would need to know about to maximize your tax returns and things of that nature. So that's another reason. You don't have to be an expert. Hire the expert to, get you to that next level. And then also, you're dealing with a professional, right? And these professionals have a network of other professionals. They got CPAs, which you need, and other estate planners. And so in that, your advisor is constantly going to workshops, trying to better themselves, talking to other advisors about various strategies that they can implement to maximize your return in your investment portfolios that you just may not get just doing it yourself.
I got you. But what about the brothers that are saying, why pay a financial advisor? We know it's not free, but why pay when you can do it yourself?
I mean that is the reason. I believe that one should just, it keeps you honest, it keeps you on track. There's various phases in that one goes through. We talk a lot, or at least I get on your show and talk about the wealth accumulation phase, right? Well, okay, you're good. Most people are good with, if they're doing it individually sometimes. In the wealth accumulating that wealth. Okay, but what happens after that? There's the preservation. You see what I'm saying? There's downs, ups and downs, ebbs and flows in the market as a whole. Okay, well, how do I preserve this wealth? Do you know what tools, what vehicles are out there for you? And then once you transition it into spending down, where you're taking money from your what you have accumulated, there needs to be a drawdown strategy. So your financial advisor can ensure or best ensure or put a, come up with a plan to spend down so that you don't spend to zero and have nothing, nothing left, right? Because life expectancy is increasing. As modern technology improves, you may or may not need your money longer. You don't want to ever outlive your money.
Like I said, I keep having the conversation with a lot of brothers talking about individual stock, group stocks, having an advisor. I'm like, come on, bro, y'all don't have an advisor. Yeah, like, bro, like I told you like 5 years ago, I've had my guy for like 4 years, and the money's I'm seeing the beautiful
Benefit,
things,
right?
the beautiful benefits. So again, Nelson, a lot of brothers want a financial advisor, but a lot of brothers with Robinhood, Coinbase, different apps. They don't feel the need to have a financial advisor. And, but I know I need one because I know I'm emotional. Certain stocks start tanking. I start selling. I start panicking. So it's good to have somebody that I can call because you're a friend, you're a brother of Black Men Sundays, but you're also my financial advisor. So when we're talking about hiring a financial advisor, let's talk about the fees. I feel like people never talk about the fees. They say, well, you have to pay me because it's not free and we're taking
Absolutely.
care of things for you. We have the network for you. But for brothers out here that are saying, well, why pay for a financial advisor if you can do it yourself? Why pay and how much are the fees? Let's have that because I feel like that's the elephant in the room.
Yeah, that's a big challenge. When you're talking to people, why should I hire someone else to do what I think that I can do? Just to put it out there, and we've kind of already stated this is not free. There's cost associated with having your portfolio professionally managed. And the way that financial advisors generally get paid, there's just three just general ways. The first way is, or one of the ways is when you pay for them to manage your assets. We call that asset or AUM, assets under management, right? Then there's commission based, and then there's a flat rate or retainer, right? And you can get them when you're paying them a financial advisor you on a retainer or a fee. You're usually looking at like a specific need, more sophisticated planning, like estate planning and whatnot, budgeting, other financial things that you may need outside of that. So when you're talking about asset based or management or assets that an advisor will manage it. They're usually going to charge 1 to 2% of the overall portfolio that they manage for you. Okay. So usually these fees are assessed to higher dollar portfolios. We're talking about once you've accumulated wealth of 250 to $500,000. And so these are out of the retail space. That's what most individuals are in, and that's fine, right? When they're first beginning, you're buying mutual funds and things of that nature. And so once you've accumulated wealth or whatnot, you may want a more sophisticated plan that is uniquely based upon you, like a tax harvesting plan, to kind of reduce your tax obligations for whatever you may be doing, right? So there's that first way of an advisor advising you. And then there's the commission based, right? And this is where a advisor is charging a commission fee based on maybe like a it's good for like a lump sum, right? A lump sum, or if you're just getting started into the investment game. And so what you're actually paying for when you're getting charged these commission fees is your advisor bringing you the fund, and then the fund manager managing the actual funds themselves, right? So for them to go out there, research all of this, and tackle the economic landscape and the stock market, and buy and sell on your behalf, and other administrative things that go on behind it. But the good thing with a commission base is, when the more money you put in, the less your fees are. With the asset base, that 1 to 2% never goes away. So if you invest, and don't get my math right, if you invest, like, say for instance, you had $1 million, right? So, and then they charge 1%. That's, I believe, $10,000 in commission, not commission, but in fees that you would be assessed every single year. Whereas if you had $1 million if you were doing a fee base, then once you put it in, you've already hit breakpoints, and then you may not be charged or assessed the fee for putting new money into the account, right? So that's kind of how the commissions based work. And then again, we have the flat fee. This is, where your financial advisor is building you a more holistic plan. You may be some budgeting needs, estate planning, and things of that nature, to where they're assessing like a one-time fee for doing that work for you. Or it could be like a monthly fee or subscription, depending on what you have them to do. So those are the three ways that an advisor gets paid. And I think that it was necessary to talk about the fees, not try to tiptoe around how an advisor is paid.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate that because a lot of people, well, they're not talking about the money. They just want to ask me how much can I contribute every month. And I'm like, okay, well, they're going to ask you that too. But I mean, you want to contribute some money, but I mean, they got to get paid too. So I'm glad you didn't tiptoe around that because, I mean, we have you on the show like every year now. So let's, it's 2026. It's February 1st, man. It's first of the month, new year. But then January, I felt like January went quick. January came, snowed, and left. So let's talk about these.
Still
Yeah,
has a little
man.
present.
So let's talk about these contribution limits for 2026.
Okay,
And
we want to talk about the contribution limits for 2026. There's usually a cost of living adjustment that's around $500. So especially when we're talking about the IRAs, and that's what kind of happened this year, right? Things go up, there's inflation and things of that nature. So it's kind of trying to combat allowing investors, or contributors rather, to invest more money into their future because of cost increases in cost. So the contribution limits for the IRA for 2026 is 7,500 if you're totally like maxing it out. You know, that's up from 2025 where it was $7,000. So if you put the max in and you want to contribute on a monthly basis now, that's $625. $625 will get you to that 7,500, right? So that's what we're working towards, right? You don't, I suggest, strongly suggest that you do to get the max return and that and get that compounding interest over time to just go ahead and put that 7,500. But do something. Don't not do anything. Contribute to your IRA, more so your Roth if you qualify. And we'll talk about those qualifiers, you know, because there may be some other individuals that don't qualify for the Roth IRA based on income levels and things of that nature. All right. So for if you're 50, age 50 or above, you can contribute, I think, another 1,100 or so dollars. You can contribute $8,600 into your IRA account. That makes sense. So the older you are, sometimes you have to play catch up because you had kids. Life happened and you weren't able to in your younger years to contribute. Well, there's catch-ups that the government allows for these tax shelters for you to put more money so that you'll be straight in retirement. Let's talk about the income limits for the IRA, the Roth limits. There isn't any income limit on a traditional, but for the income, the Roth portion, if you file single, you can contribute the max, but until you reach that $153,000 mark. So once you reach that, your opportunity to contribute the full 7,500 begins to weigh down. You need to kind of talk to your tax professional as to how much that would be, as far as the allowance, right? So that opportunity begins to phase out again at 153 until you reach 168,000. And at 168,000, you can no longer contribute to a Roth IRA if you're single. Now, if you file jointly, you can max out your Roth IRA until you reach 242,000. So 242,000 or less, you're straight. You can just put the whole 7,500 in. But once you reach that 242,000 mark, it begins to, you know, to your ability to contribute starts to wane. And at 252,000, you can no longer contribute to an IRA if you're filing jointly. All right, on the 401k side, your 401k, your 403b, your 457, your thrift plans, you can contribute in 2026 a total of 24,500. 50 plus, you can contribute 8,000 additional dollars, which means that you can contribute a total of 32,500 for 2026. And then there's the super catch up. If you're 62 plus, and you didn't get an opportunity in your youth or your younger age to contribute like you wanted to, you can contribute to your 401k if you're still working an additional $11,250 for a total of $35,750 in 2026 to that 401k tax shelter. So that's pretty cool stuff, man. Awesome stuff.
You know,
Let's
that's
get
great
on it.
information. Yeah, we got to
Yeah,
get
let's
on
get
it,
on it.
man. Yeah, we got to get on it, man. Especially with these limits. I'm looking like, well, okay. So
Yeah.
yeah, speaking of, you know, I see 2026, there's a lot of legitimized crypto going on. You know, I remember when we had you on the show in years past. I remember when we had you on the battle with the brother that was all about the crypto. That conversation was very interesting. So where are we at in crypto with
In the
2026?
crypto world, it's being legitimized, right? Less speculative because of what transpired, what President Trump did with the creation of the crypto reserve, right? And so in your wallets, one can hold now Bitcoin, Ethereum, XRP, right? These are the ones that are coming into the storehouse that we have in this reserve. So there's the legitimate side becoming less speculative. There may be future regulations to tighten it up. You have institutions that have adopted it. So now you're going to have the creation of ETFs and different funds that you can buy into and have the comfort, like I like to have in diversification, and one that if there is outside of these three that I just mentioned, cryptos, that they're very, very solid, right? But those cryptos in some shape or form have been adopted by institutions, and they'll be packaging them and offering them to the general public if you didn't want to just hold these cryptos in your wallets, your crypto wallets.
Great information, and you gave us the game. So now I got the Mag 7 plus 1. I got some cryptos I can invest in. Man, you giving us the game today. And before I let you get out of here, man, we already talked about the contribution limits. What about this big beautiful bill, man? I'm hearing it's not quite out yet, but I'm hearing it's coming through. It's supposed to help the next generation. So let's talk about that a little bit.
So within the confines of the Big Beautiful Bill, there is the Trump accounts, right? These are these savings accounts that are going to, I mean, do wonders for future savings for our children, right? So everyone should try to open one for their children, their grandchildren or whatnot, once they become available, right? So there's talks of them being available for the public to open in the summer, around July 4th, right? And so right off the top, the contribution limits have been set at $5,000. These accounts operate like a IRA tax shelter where the growth is tax-free. Withdrawals are prohibited until the beneficiary turns 18. And then if the withdrawals are taxed at the, if they do withdraw, the taxes are at the beneficiary's tax rate. And then these accounts automatically convert to IRAs when the beneficiary turns 18. And then the last little bulletin or in my readings and my research on these accounts is that they operate like a 529 plan, meaning that there is no requirement of income. So with the IRA, you have to have income to contribute, right? You have to have a job or some sort of income that can be recorded before you can contribute, but that's not the case with these new Trump accounts that are coming through. So that's the information. I mean, it's limited information on it, but that's the buzz on those.
So if I open one of them Trump accounts for a kid and I mess around and put too much money in it, I can't be like, oh, I need to grab some of that back. I can't do that. I gotta make sure whatever I'm putting in, it's gonna stick to the 18. Let's
Till the
clarify
18.
that.
You don't want to touch it. You want that growth. You want that compounding interest. That is a gift. And then the government is giving $1,000, right? They're just like, hey, we're gonna put this in an index fund, like I talked about in part one, and we're gonna let it rip. We're gonna let it do what it does.
So anyway, cool, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on Black Men Sundays, Nelson. You come on every year, every January. You came on January this year. You back on February 1st, which is today. So I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. Enjoy your weekend, and
Thank you.
hopefully, y'all don't get no more snow up in Nash Vegas.
No, no more snow and ice.
It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away.